You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. Can help get the hen day built. Woodley, happy belated Happy New Year. I hope you had a great holidays with everyone. Lots to get to, so let's jump right into it. Jack Campbell, you were the first one, so I want to get a credit. You talked about his pads and said, hey, you probably need to change him. He's changed the pads. It's been a few starts. What difference do you notice?
Looks bigger, presents bigger, and that's not so much the pads as it is the chest protector. And like, to me, the funny thing is a lot of the tension will be on the pads and glove, which is one of the, you know, that's a piece of equipment that's pretty unique to goaltenders in the field. That's pretty important. But I think the switch from Vaughn to Bryan's, there's some similarities there in terms of how that glove feels. Blocker to me is a really big one. Bryan's, their blocker is a lot different, but when you talk to goalies about sort of the uniqueness of their equipment, and what is the most personal piece of equipment? And this might surprise some people, and we actually had a debate about this in our little in-goal group chat. But a lot of guys, especially at the pro level, like, they'll talk about chest protectors as, you know, a piece that has a real individual feel aspect to it, and can at times, for some guys, not all, but for some, can be the hardest piece to change because, you know, what you cover, where that chest protector ends, how it fits under the arms and closes seams, trusting that. Some guys, it's just they don't even want to put a new one on during the season, even if it's the same brand, because they get one broken in and feeling soft and relaxed, and they know how it's going to flex, and they know how it's going to close, they know how it's going to, you know, seal those holes between the arms and the body and what their coverage is. They won't even change when it's the same brand in season. So don't underestimate the significance of that change for Jack Campbell, especially since a bigger, bulkier chest protector is probably going to feel a lot more restrictive. In terms of the pads, like the whole thing, to be honest with you, as much as we talked about it as soon as they signed him in the summer and that this was an issue for him during his time in Toronto, I'm still surprised that he did it in season, which may speak to how, you know, sort of how tough his start was in Edmonton. But you don't see this very often where a guy will make changes that big in the middle of a season. And so I kind of wish I'd had an opportunity to talk to him. Obviously, Edmonton comes in here later in the month. I'm looking forward to that, just to sort of, you know, sort of speak goalie with him, frankly, and to ask questions about some of the specific things that, you know, a goaltender is going to feel and how they would manifest themselves. So, you know, I'd be guessing in terms of how he feels about it from a distance. But to me, the biggest thing is he just presents a little bit bigger in there. And, you know, you can see he still has a narrow butterfly. And when he moves in and out of the butterfly, because of that, there's a little more opening and closing than a guy who, you know, has a wider butterfly. Like, you need to stick your legs out to make a push, which opens a hole, whereas a guy with a wider butterfly just lifts his knee and he's got an edge and he can push laterally. So there's still going to be exposure there in the five hole, but you can see how much taller these look when he's on the ice compared to the other ones. And the interesting thing is Bryan's is, and that particular pad, like, I understand why it's a natural transition for him to go to that pad, because it looks more modern, it is more rigid, but it's still one of the most flexible pads on the market, particularly that model. As a matter of fact, there was an issue with Robin Lehner a few years ago wearing the same thing, where he had a goal in the playoffs where it actually hit that top of the pad in the butterfly, what we call the thigh rise. And there was so much flex in it that it pushed it back and created like the old Western saloon doors. It sort of opened like that and ended up squirting through and almost ending up in the net. I think actually one in the playoffs actually did end up in the net that way. So it's not a drastic change in terms of the flexibility and feel, but the way it presents squared off at the top with taller coverage, more coverage, I think to me that's just the perception of what a shooter is going to see. And the ability, it gives you a margin for error. You know, Freddie Anderson made this change this year too. He had actually shortened his pads on purpose because he felt more mobile in them. And I remember him showing me when he drops into a butterfly, even though they were below his maximum height, what he was allowed by the NHL, he showed me how when he drops into a butterfly, they closed perfectly at the top. And that's great, but the reality is you're not always down in a perfect butterfly. When you're moving, you open that hole. When you're sliding left to right, you open that hole. You haven't got your pads together the whole time. And having that extra height in the thigh rise just gives you some margin for error. Now, somebody tries to slip it in five holes, you're pushing to your left or pushing to either side, you know, in the butterfly on a deke. You've got that extra coverage, that extra seal that Jack was, frankly, lacking in the old pads. So I think this is something that's going to take a while for him to get used to. It's a big switch, but the first thing that jumps out is just the presentation looks that much bigger.
Woodley, you might have just set a record for longest answer. So let's quick it up here so we can get to more topics, all right? Holy doodle. I love when you come back. You're fired up. Now, let's hit to Mr. Copley in the L.A. Kings. He's started 12 of the last 16 games. He's 10-2. And maybe the most important number is he's just not giving up goals. He has a 2.5 goals against average in L.A., which is almost a full goal below either Quick or Cal Peterson. What is he doing better that those two weren't?
Just not giving up bad ones. Like, his numbers actually don't jump off the charts, to be honest with you, Jason. I looked at the adjusted. He's below expected. He's actually got the same numbers as Stuart Skinner in a much smaller sample in terms of relative to environment. They're both just slightly below expected this season. But when you compare that to what was going on for the other two, obviously Cal Peterson, before he was sent down to the AHL, had the worst adjusted save percentage in the league, and Jonathan Quick right now is fifth worst in the league. So, you know, he's having a season that actually it's very similar profile-wise to Jack Campbell, frankly. So Copley's just come in there and given them sort of expected goaltending, for lack of a better term. In other words, he's not giving up any bad goals. You know, he's just kind of providing steadiness and sturdiness. And for a team that wasn't getting that, hadn't been getting that from either guy, whether it was Quick or Peterson before, like sometimes that's all you need. You don't need spectacular. You watch him in there tonight and you'll notice it almost looks rigid at times. He's very purposeful in his movements, very efficient in them, but they can look at times a little robotic. Tracks the puck really well, squares into space really well, but he's almost like the anti-Jonathan Quick. Like there's not going to be a lot of flow, a lot of extra movement. There's not going to be a lot of superfluous movement. There's not going to be as much explosive movement, but he just puts himself in position efficiently, steadily. What I'm curious is, can it hold up, say, against the number one power play in the NHL if Edmonton gets chances on the man advantages? Because the baseline has been really strong, but is the ceiling, what's the ceiling? And can the Oilers test that ceiling by creating dynamic offense? Because when I look at his numbers, again, he's making the saves he's supposed to make, but when it comes to the more dynamic offense, broken plays, creating plays across the middle of the ice, one-timers off lateral passes, his numbers dip below expected. And so for the Oilers, it's a matter of, like, you can't look at it sometimes, oh, like young goaltender or whatever, guy hasn't been in the league much, we just need to get shots on goal. No, shots on goal are exactly what he's thriving on. What you need to do is try and create dynamic offense, because I'm not sure yet that he's shown that he has a ceiling where, you know, he can sort of maintain the numbers he has if you test him in a more dynamic environment.
And when you say dynamic, you're talking, you know, cross seam and stuff like that, right? Side to side?
Yeah, I mean, you know, broken plays, traffic in front of the net, like it's kind of lateral plays. There's two ways to create dynamic offense. One is broken plays. He's actually been pretty good on broken plays, but it's more slot line, one-timers, creating side-to-side passes, things across the middle of the ice exactly, and then quick shots on the other end of it.
Their next two opponents, Anaheim and San Jose, if the Oilers want to get to a home ice advantage, those are games they got to win. You look at the goaltenders now. San Jose has had to, basically they've used Reimer or Kaapo Kähkönen, and Kähkönen has struggled mightily. He's got under 870. And then Anaheim's goaltenders. Now, if you just look at their numbers, Kevin, it'll say, well, they're all bad. How much is it goaltending? How much is it team defense for those two teams?
I mean, you know, Kähkönen's, he's just been bad. Like, his numbers are down there with some of the other guys we just talked about. You know, again, with all due respect, he's right there with Jack Campbell and Jonathan Quick in terms of the season they've had to date. Reimer, since he came back off the injury, his numbers have dipped below expected, but overall, he's not as bad. They're a pretty loose team, but they're right. Their expected save percentage is right around league average. Can't really say the same for the Anaheim Ducks. They've you know, their goaltending has actually been better than San Jose's on a whole. They're all just sitting right below expected. Actually, here's the thing. There's almost no goaltenders in the entire Pacific Division that are above expected right now. Like, goaltending ain't a strength to this entire division right now. And they kind of fit, almost ironically, near the top end of that. Like, you have nights for Gibson where he's spectacular, but what they're asking him to do on a night-in and night-out basis just becomes too much. And then you have nights like the other one where once the dam breaks, it just opens wide open. And obviously the Bruins have done that to a lot of teams. When you're facing Gibson, like, you just kind of got to hope that you get one of those nights where you know, after a while you get up a couple and the dam just kind of breaks. I just think it's got to be hard to sort of maintain your level of focus and concentration and just that level of play behind a team that's that bad, not just defensively, but overall, and pretty much has no chance on most nights. So I think what happens with the Ducks is you get ahead of them and the play slips. The longer you let them hang around in games and the more you let a guy like Gibson sort of dig in, the more you run into a chance where you could have a night like he had earlier this week or like Lucas Dostal had against the Edmonton Oilers earlier season. Like, their ceilings are really high, but there's a ton of inconsistency in their goaltenders, and I do think a lot of that is in the environment.
And one last one for you. The Vancouver Canucks, Demko is coming back. Will it matter?
Probably not. As bad as they were defensively last year, they're actually worse this season. They were a bottom third team last year that was propped up by Thatcher Demko. Obviously, he didn't get off to the start he wanted this season. Injuries played a role in that, I believe. Ultimately gets hurt, and now he is on the trip right now. Don't expect him back on the trip, so I don't think he'll play by the time they get to Edmonton at the end of this trip, but he might be getting closer by the time the Oilers get here later this month. And I just don't think any of it matters if they're going to be this bad defensively. When it comes to giving up the most dangerous types of chances off the rush, they're 31st. That's where offense is going. That's where the most dangerous type of offense comes from, is off the rush. And they give up the most dangerous chances off the most dangerous chances off the rush, 31st in the NHL. Like, they aren't just a poor defensive team. They're one of the worst defensive teams, especially off the rush, in the entire National Hockey League. And it's not just about a defense that isn't good enough. And you remember I talked about this going into the season, about the questions around this defense, but it's that they don't have forwards that are committed to making the right decisions in the neutral zone. There's no back pressure. I mean, time and space is something that opponents have a ton of against them. So as much as there may be Canucks fans holding up hope that, you know, Thatcher Demko can come in and sort of right this ship, it would take, like, beyond Vezina-type performance, it would take an otherworldly performance to save this team from itself, because right now they're just not good enough defensively, not even close.
The Bruins, we'll get to that next week, but Allmark, he's leading the league in save percentage, goals against, and wins, so it might be hard to say he's not one of the leaders for the Vezina. So we'll get into all that next week. Woodley, have yourself a great one. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Perfect. Thanks, Jason.